Chapter 12. Across the Taran. Lan came down the stairs, telling the company to dismount and lead their horses after him through the fog. Again, they had to trust that the warder knew where he was going. The fog swirled around Rand's knees, hiding his feet, obscuring everything more than a yard away. The fog was not as heavy as it had been outside the town, but he could barely make out his companions. Still, no human stirred in the night except for them. A few more windows than before showed a light, but the thick mist turned most of them to dim patches, and as often as not, that hazy glow hanging in the gray was all that was visible. Other houses, revealing a little more, seemed to float on a sea of cloud, or to thrust abruptly out of the mist while their neighbors remained hidden, so that they could have stood alone for miles around. Rand moved stiffly from the ache of the long ride, wondering if there was any way he could walk the rest of the way to Tar Valon. Not that walking was much better than riding at that moment, of course, but even so, his feet were almost the only part of him that was not sore. At least he was used to walking. Only once did anyone speak loudly enough for Rand to hear clearly.
"You must handle it," Moraine said in answer to something unheard from Lan. "He will remember too much as it is, and no help for it. If I stand out in his thoughts..."
Rand grumpily shifted his now sodden cloak on his shoulders, keeping close with the others. Matt and Perrin grumbled to themselves, muttering under their breaths, with bitten-off exclamations whenever one stubbed a toe on something unseen. Tom Maryland grumbled too, words like hot meal and fire and mulled wine reaching Rand. But neither the warder nor the Aes Sedai took notice. Egwene marched along without a word, her back straight, her head high. It was a somewhat painfully hesitant march, to be sure, for she was as unused to riding as the rest. She was getting her adventure, he thought glumly, and as long as it lasted, he doubted if she would notice little things like fog or damp or cold. There must be a difference in what you saw, it seemed to him, depending on whether you sought adventure or had it forced on you. The stories could no doubt make galloping through a cold fog with a drakkar, and the light alone knew what else chasing you, sound thrilling. Egwene might be feeling a thrill. He only felt cold and damp and glad to have a village around him again, even if it was Taran Ferry. Abruptly, he walked into something large and warm in the murk. Lan's stallion. The warder and Moraine had stopped, and the rest of the party did the same, patting their mounts as much to comfort themselves as the animals. The fog was a little thinner here, enough for them to see one another more clearly than they had in a long while, but not enough to make out much more. Their feet were still hidden by low billows like gray floodwater. The houses seemed to have all been swallowed. Cautiously, Rand let Cloud forward a little way and was surprised to hear his boots scrape on wooden planks. The ferry landing. He backed up carefully, making the gray back as well. He had heard what the Taran ferry landing was like. A bridge that led nowhere except to the ferry boat. The Taran was supposed to be wide and deep, with treacherous currents that could pull under the strongest swimmer. Much wider than the wine spring water, he supposed. With the fog added in, it was a relief when he felt dirt under his feet again. A fierce hist from Lan, as sharp as the fog. The warder gestured at them as he dashed to Perrin's side and threw back the stocky youth's cloak, exposing the great axe. Obediently, if still not understanding, Rand tossed his own cloak over his shoulder to show his sword. As Lan moved swiftly back to his horse, bobbing lights appeared in the mist, and muffled footsteps approached. Six stolid-faced men in rough clothes followed Master Hightower. The torches they carried burned away a patch of fog around them. When they stopped, all of the party from Emmons Field could be plainly seen, the lot of them surrounded by a gray wall that seemed thicker for the torchlight reflected from it. The ferryman examined them, his narrow head tilted, nose twitching like a weasel sniffing the breeze for a trap. Lan leaned against his saddle with apparent casualness, but one hand rested ostentatiously on the long hilt of his sword. There was an air about him of a metal spring, compressed, waiting. Rand hurriedly copied the warder's pose, at least insofar as putting his hand on his sword. He did not think he could achieve that deadly-seeming slouch. "They'd probably laugh if I tried." Perrin eased his axe in its leather loop and planted his feet deliberately. Matt put a hand to his quiver, though Rand was not sure what condition his bowstring was in after being out in all this damp. Tom Maryland stepped forward grandly and held up one empty hand, turning it slowly. Suddenly he gestured with a flourish, and a dagger twirled between his fingers.
The hilt slapped into his palm, and, abruptly nonchalant, he began trimming his fingernails. A low, delighted laugh floated from Moraine. Egwene clapped as if watching a performance at festival, then stopped and looked abashed, though her mouth twitched with a smile just the same. Hightower seemed far from amused. He stared at Tom, then cleared his throat loudly.
There was mention of more gold for the crossing.
He looked around at them again, a sullen, sly look.
What you gave me before is in a safe place now, here. It's none of it where you can get at it.
The rest of the gold, Lan told him, goes into your hand when we are on the other side. The leather purse hanging at his waist clinked as he gave it a little shake. For a moment, the ferryman's eyes darted, but at last he nodded.
Let's be about it, then, he muttered,
and stalked out onto the landing followed by his six helpers. The fog burned away around them as they moved. Gray tendrils closed in behind, quickly filling where they had been. Rand hurried to keep up. The ferry itself was a wooden barge with high sides, boarded by a ramp that could be raised to block off the end. Ropes as thick as a man's wrist ran along each side of it, ropes fastened to massive posts at the end of the landing and disappearing into the night over the river. The ferryman's helpers stuck their torches in iron brackets on the ferry's sides, waited while everyone led their horses aboard, then pulled up the ramp. The deck creaked beneath hooves and shuffling feet, and the ferry shifted with the weight. Hightower muttered half under his breath, growling for them to keep the horses still and stay to the center, out of the hauler's way. He shouted at his helpers, chivying them as they readied the ferry to cross, but the men moved at the same reluctant speed, whatever he said, and he was half-hearted about it, often cutting off in mid-shout to hold his torch high and peer into the fog. Finally, he stopped shouting altogether and went to the bow, where he stood staring into the mist that covered the river. He did not move until one of the haulers touched his arm. Then he jumped, glaring.
What? Oh, you, is it? Ready? About time. Well, man, what are you waiting for?
He waved his arms, heedless of the torch, and the way the horses whickered, and tried to move back.
Cast off! Give way! Move!
The man slouched off to comply, and Hightower peered once more into the fog ahead, rubbing his free hand uneasily on his coat front. The ferry lurched as its moorings were loosed, and the strong current caught it, then lurched again as the guide ropes held it. The haulers, three to a side, grabbed hold of the ropes at the front of the ferry and laboriously began walking toward the back, muttering uneasily as they edged out onto the gray-cloaked river. The landing disappeared as mist surrounded them, tenuous streamers drifting across the ferry between the flickering torches. The barge rocked slowly in the current. Nothing except the steady tread of the haulers, forward to take hold of the ropes and back down again, pulling, gave a hint of any other movement. No one spoke. The villagers kept as close to the center of the ferry as they could. They had heard the tarn was far wider than the streams they were used to. The fog made it infinitely vaster in their minds. After a time, Rand moved closer to Lan. Rivers a man could not wade or swim or even see across were nervous-making to someone who had never seen anything broader or deeper than a waterwood pond.
Would they really have tried to rob us?
He asked quietly.
He acted more as if he were afraid we would rob him.
The warder eyed the ferryman and his helpers, none appeared to be listening, before answering just as softly.
With the fog to hide them, well, when what they do is hidden, men sometimes deal with strangers in ways they wouldn't if there were other eyes to see. And the quickest to harm a stranger are the soonest to think a stranger will harm them. This fellow, I believe he might sell his mother to Trollocs for stew meat if the price was right. I'm a little surprised you ask. I heard the way people in Emmons Field speak of those from Tarin Ferry.
Yes, but, well, everyone says they, but I never thought they would actually.
Rand decided he had better stop thinking that he knew anything at all of what people were like beyond his own village.
He might tell the fade we crossed on the ferry, he said at last. Maybe he'll bring the Trollocs over after us.
Lan chuckled dryly.
Robbing a stranger is one thing. Dealing with a half-man, something else again. Can you really see him ferrying Trollocs over, especially in this fog, no matter how much gold was offered? Or even talking to a Murdral, if he had any choice? Just the thought of it would keep him running for a month. I don't think we have to worry very much about dark friends in Tarin Ferry. Not here. We are safe, for a time at least. From this lot, anyway. Watch yourself.
Hightower had turned from peering into the fog ahead. Pointed face pushed forward and torch held high, he stared at Lan and Rand as if seeing them clearly for the first time. Deck planks creaked under the hauler's feet and the occasional stamp of a hoof. Abruptly, the ferryman twitched as he realized they were watching him, watching them. With a leap, he spun back to looking for the far bank, or whatever it was he sought in the fog.
Say no more, Lan said, so softly, Rand almost could not understand. These are bad days to speak of Trollocs or dark friends, or the father of lies with strange ears to hear. Such talk can bring worse than the dragon's fang scrawled on your door.
Rand felt no desire to go on with his questions. Gloom settled on him even more than it had before. Dark friends? As if Fades and Trollocs and Drakkar were not enough to worry about. At least you could tell a Trolloc at sight. Abruptly, pilings loomed shadowy in the mist before them. The ferry thudded against the far bank, and then the haulers were hurrying to lash the craft fast and let down the ramp at that end with a thump, while Matt and Perrin announced loudly that the Taran was not half as wide as they had heard. Lan led his stallion down the ramp, followed by Moraine and the others. As Rand, the last, took Cloud down behind Bella, Master Hightower called out angrily,
"Here now! Here! Where's my gold?"
"It shall be paid," Moraine's voice came from somewhere in the mist.
Rand's boots clumped from the ramp to a wooden landing.
"And a silver mark for each of your men," the Aes Sedai added, "for the quick crossing."
The ferryman hesitated, face pushed forward as if he smelled danger. But at the mention of silver, the haulers roused themselves. Some paused to seize a torch, but they all thumped down the ramp before Hightower could open his mouth. With a sullen grimace, the ferryman followed his crew. Cloud's hooves clumped hollowly in the fog as Rand made his way carefully along the landing. The gray mist was as thick here as over the river. At the foot of the landing, the warder was handing out coins, surrounded by the torches of Hightower and his fellows. Everyone else except Moraine waited just beyond in an anxious cluster. The Aes Sedai stood looking at the river, though what she could see was beyond Rand. With a shiver, he hitched up his cloak, sodden as it was. He was really out of Two Rivers now, and it seemed much farther away than the width of a river.
"There," Lan said, handing a last coin to Hightower. "As agreed."
He did not put up his purse, and the ferrety-faced man eyed it greedily. With a loud creak, the landing shivered. Hightower jerked upright, head swiveling back toward the mist-cloaked ferry. The torches remaining on board were a pair of dim, fuzzy points of light. The landing groaned, and with a thunderous crack of snapping wood, the twin glows lurched, then began to revolve. Egwene cried out wordlessly, and Tom cursed.
"It's loose!"
Hightower screamed. Grabbing his haulers, he pushed them toward the end of the landing.
"The ferry's loose, you fools! Get it! Get it!"
The haulers stumbled a few steps under Hightower's shoves, then stopped. The faint lights on the ferry spun faster, then faster still. The fog above them swirled, sucked into a spiral. The landing trembled. The cracking and splintering of wood filled the air as the ferry began breaking apart.
"Whirlpool,"
one of the haulers said, his voice filled with awe.
"No whirlpools on the Taran."
Hightower sounded empty.
"Never been a whirlpool."
"An unfortunate occurrence."
Moraine's voice was hollow in the fog that made her a shadow as she turned from the river.
"Unfortunate," Lan agreed in a flat tone. "It seems you'll be carrying no one else across the river for a time. An ill thing that you lost your craft in our service." He delved again into his purse, ready in his hand. "This should repay you."
For a moment, Hightower stared at the gold, glinting in Lan's hand in the torchlight. Then his shoulders hunched and his eyes darted to the others he had carried across. Made indistinct by the fog, the Emmonsfielders stood silently. With a frightened, inarticulate cry, the ferryman snatched the coins from Lan, whirled, and ran into the mist. His haulers were only half a step behind him, their torches quickly swallowed as they vanished upriver.
"There is nothing further to hold us here," the Aes Sedai said, as if nothing out of the ordinary had happened.
Leading her white mare, she started away from the landing up the bank. Rand stood staring at the hidden river.
"It could have been a happenstance. No whirlpools," he said, "but it...
Abruptly, he realized everyone else had gone. Hurriedly, he scrambled up the gently sloping bank. In the space of 3 paces, the heavy mist faded away to nothing. He stopped dead and stared back. Along a line running down the shore, thick gray hung on one side. On the other shone a clear night sky, still dark, though the sharpness of the moon hinted at dawn not far off. The warder and the Aes Sedai stood conferring beside their horses a short distance beyond the border of the fog. The others huddled a little apart. Even in the moonlit darkness, their nervousness was palpable. All eyes were on Lan and Moraine, and all but Egwene were leaning back as if torn between losing the pair and getting too close. Rand trotted the last few spans to Egwene's side, leading Cloud, and she grinned at him. He did not think the shine in her eyes was all from moonlight. It follows the river as if drawn with a pen, Moraine was saying in satisfied tones. There are not 10 women in Tar Valon who could do that unaided, not to mention from the back of a galloping horse.
I don't mean to complain, Moraine Sedai, Tom said, sounding oddly diffident for him. But would it not have been better to cover us a little further, say to Berlon? If that Drakkar looks on this side of the river, we'll lose everything we have gained.
Drakkar are not very smart, Master Merlin, the Aes Sedai said dryly. Fearsome and deadly dangerous, and with sharp eyes, but little intelligence. It will tell the Murdral that this side of the river is clear, but the river itself is cloaked for miles in both directions. The Murdral will know the extra effort that cost me. He will have to consider that we may be escaping down the river, and that will slow him. He will have to divide his efforts. The fog should hold long enough that he will never be sure that we did not travel at least partway by boat. I could have extended the fog a little way toward Berlon instead, but then the Drakkar could search the river in a matter of hours, and the Murdral would know exactly where we were headed. Tom made a puffing sound and shook his head.
I apologize, Aes Sedai. I hope I did not offend.
Aes Sedai. Matt stopped to swallow audibly. The fairy, I don't understand why. He trailed off weakly, and there was a silence so deep that the loudest sound Rand heard was his own breathing. Finally, Moraine spoke, and her voice filled the empty silence with sharpness. You all want explanations, but if I explained my every action to you, I would have no time for anything else. In the moonlight, the Aes Sedai seemed taller, somehow, almost looming over them. Know this. I intend to see you safely to Tar Valon. That is the one thing you need to know.
If we keep standing here, Lan put in, the Drakkar will not need to search the river. If I remember correctly, he led his horse on up the riverbank. As if the water's movement had loosened something in his chest, Rand drew a deep breath. He heard others doing the same, even Tom, and remembered an old saying. Better to spit in a wolf's eye than to cross an Aes Sedai. Yet the tension had lessened. Moraine was not looming over anyone. She barely reached his chest. I don't suppose we could rest a bit, Perrin said hopefully, ending with a yawn. Egwene slumped against Bella, sighed tiredly. It was the first sound even approaching a complaint that Rand had heard from her. Maybe now she realizes this isn't some grand adventure after all. Then he guiltily remembered that, unlike him, she had not slept the day away. We do need to rest, Moraine Sedai, he said. After all, we have ridden all night. Then I suggest we see what Lan has for us, Moraine said. Come. She led them on up the bank into the woods beyond the river. Bare branches thickened the shadows. A good 100 spans from the tarn, they came to a dark mound beside a clearing. Here a long-ago flood had undermined and toppled an entire stand of leather leaves, washing them together into a great thick tangle, an apparently solid mass of trunks and branches and roots. Moraine stopped, and suddenly a light appeared low to the ground, coming from under the heap of trees. Thrusting a stub of torch ahead of him, Lan crawled out from under the mound and straightened.
No unwelcome visitors, he told Moraine.
And the wood I left is still dry, so I started a small fire. We will rest warm.
You expected us to stop here? Egwene said in surprise.
It seemed a likely place, Lan replied. I'd like to be prepared, just in case.
Moraine took the torch from him. Will you see to the horses? When you are done, I will do what I can about everyone's tiredness. Right now I want to talk to Egwene. Egwene?
Rand watched the two women crouch down and disappear under the great pile of tree trunks. There was a low opening, barely big enough to crawl into. The light of the torch vanished. Lan had included feed bags and a small quantity of oats in the supplies, but he stopped the others from unsaddling their horses. Instead, he produced the hobbles he had also packed. They would rest easier without the saddles, but if we must leave quickly, there may be no time to replace them.
They don't look to me like they need any rest, Perrin said as he attempted to slip a feed bag over his mount's muzzle.
The horse tossed its head before allowing him to put the straps in place. Rand was having difficulties with Cloud, too, taking three tries before he could get the canvas bag over the gray's nose.
They do, Lan told them.
He straightened from hobbling his stallion.
Oh, they can still run. They will run at their fastest if we let them. Right up to the second they dropped dead from exhaustion they never even felt. I would rather Moraine Sedai had not had to do what she did, but it was necessary.
He patted the stallion's neck, and the horse bobbed his head as if acknowledging the water's touch.
We must go slowly with them for the next few days until they recover. More slowly than I would like, but with luck, it will be enough.
Is that, Matt swallowed audibly, is that what she meant, about our tiredness?
Rand patted Cloud's neck and stared at nothing. Despite what she had done for Tam, he had no desire for the Aes Sedai to use the power on him.
Light. She as much as admitted sinking the ferry.
Something like it, Lan chuckled wryly. But you will not have to worry about running yourself to death, not unless things get a lot worse than they are. Just think of it as an extra night's sleep.
The shrill scream of the Drakkar suddenly echoed from above the fog-covered river. Even the horses froze. Again it came, closer now, and again piercing Rand's skull like needles. Then the cries were fading until they had faded away entirely.
Luck, Lan breathed. It searches the river for us.
He gave a quick shrug and abruptly sounded matter-of-fact.
Let's get inside. I could do with some hot tea and something to fill my belly.
Rand was the first to crawl on hands and knees through the opening in the tangle of trees and down a short tunnel. At the end of it, he stopped, still crouching. Ahead was an irregularly shaped space, a woody cave easily large enough to hold them all. The roof of tree trunks and branches came too low to allow any but the women to stand. Smoke from a small fire on a bed of river stones drifted up and through. The draft was enough to keep the space free of smoke, but the interweaving was too thick to let out even a glimmer of the flames. Moraine and Egwene, their cloaks thrown aside, sat cross-legged facing one another beside the fire.
The one power, Moraine was saying, comes from the true source, the driving force of creation, the force the Creator made to turn the wheel of time.
She put her hands together in front of her and pushed them against each other.
Saidin, the male half of the true source, and Saidar, the female half, work against each other and at the same time together to provide that force.
Saidin,
she lifted one hand, then let it drop,
is fouled by the touch of the Dark One, like water with a thin slick of rancid oil floating on top. The water is still pure, but it cannot be touched without touching the foulness. Only Saidar is still safe to be used.
Egwene's back was to Rand. He could not see her face, but she was leaning forward eagerly. Matt poked Rand from behind and muttered something, and he moved on into the tree cavern. Moraine and Egwene ignored his entry. The other men crowded in behind him, tossing off damp cloaks, settling around the fire and holding hands out to the warmth. Lan, the last to enter, pulled water bags and leather sacks from a nook in the wall, took out a kettle, and began to prepare tea. He paid no attention to what the women were saying, but Rand's friends began to stop toasting their hands and stare openly. Tom pretended that all of his interest was engaged in loading his thickly carved pipe, but the way he leaned toward the women gave him away. Moraine and Egwene acted as if they were alone.
No, Moraine said in answer to a question Rand had missed. The true source cannot be used up any more than the river can be used up by the wheel of a mill. The source is the river. The Aes Sedai, the water wheel.
And you really think I can learn?
Egwene asked. Her face shone with eagerness.
Rand had never seen her look so beautiful or so far away from him.
I can become an Aes Sedai.
Rand jumped up, cracking his head against the low roof of logs. Tom Marilyn grabbed his arm, yanking him back down.
Don't be a fool, the gleeman murmured.
He eyed the women, neither seemed to have noticed, and the look he gave Rand was sympathetic.
It's beyond you now, boy.
Child, Moraine said gently, only a very few can learn to touch the true source and use the one power. Some of those can learn to a greater degree, some to a lesser. You are one of the bare handful for whom there is no need to learn. At least touching the source will come to you whether you want it or not. Without the teaching you can receive in Tar Valon, though, you will never learn to channel it fully, and you may not survive. Men who have the ability to touch Saidin born in them die, of course, and if the Red Aja does not find them and gentle them...
Tom growled deep in his throat, and Rand shifted uncomfortably. Men like those of whom the Aes Sedai spoke were rare. He had only heard of three in his whole life, and thanked the light never in the Two Rivers. But the damage they did before the Aes Sedai found them was always bad enough for the news to carry, like the news of wars or earthquakes that destroyed cities. He had never really understood what the Ajahs did. According to the stories, there were societies among the Aes Sedai that seemed to plot and squabble among themselves more than anything else. But the stories were clear on one point. The Red Aja held its prime duty to be the prevention of another breaking of the world, and they did it by hunting down every man who even dreamed of wielding the One Power. Matt and Perrin looked as if they suddenly wished they were back home in their beds.
But some of the women die, too. It is hard to learn without a guide. The women we do not find, those who live, often become... Well, in this part of the world, they might become wisdoms of their villages.
The Aes Sedai paused thoughtfully.
The old blood is strong in Emmonsfield, and the old blood sings. I knew you for what you were the moment I saw you. No Aes Sedai can stand in the presence of a woman who can channel, or who is close to her change and not feel it.
She rummaged in the pouch at her belt and produced the small blue gem on a gold chain that she had earlier worn in her hair.
You are very close to your change, your first touching. It will be better if I guide you through it. That way you will avoid the unpleasant effects that come to those who must find their own way.
Egwene's eyes widened as she looked at the stone, and she wet her lips repeatedly.
Does that have the power?
Of course not,
Moraine snapped.
Things do not have the power, child. Even an Angreal is only a tool. This is just a pretty blue stone, but it can give off light. Here.
Egwene's hands trembled as Moraine laid the stone on her fingertips. She started to pull back, but the Aes Sedai held both her hands in one of hers and gently touched the other to the side of Egwene's head.
Look at the stone, the Aes Sedai said softly. It is better this way than fumbling alone. Clear your mind of everything but the stone. Clear your mind and let yourself drift. There is only the stone and emptiness. I will begin it. Drift and let me guide you. No thoughts. Drift.
Rand's fingers dug into his knees. His jaws clenched until they hurt.
She has to fail. She has to.
Light bloomed in the stone, just one flash of blue, and then gone. No brighter than a firefly, but he flinched as if it had been blinding. Egwene and Moraine stared into the stone, faces empty. Another flash came, and another, until the azure light pulsed like the beating of a heart.
It's the Aes Sedai, he thought, desperately. Moraine's doing it, not Egwene.
One last feeble flicker, and the stone was merely a bauble again. Rand held his breath. For a moment, Egwene continued to stare at the small stone, then she looked up at Moraine.
I thought I felt something, but perhaps you're mistaken about me. I am sorry I wasted your time.
I have wasted nothing, child. A small smile of satisfaction flitted across Moraine's lips. That last light was yours alone.
It was?
Egwene exclaimed, then slid immediately back into glumness.
But it was barely there at all.
Now you are behaving like a foolish village girl. Most who come to Tar Valon must study for many months before they can do what you just did. You may go far, perhaps even the Ammerlin seat one day, if you study hard and work hard.
You mean?
With a cry of delight, Egwene threw her arms around the Aes Sedai.
Oh, thank you. Rand, did you hear? I'm going to be an Aes Sedai.